Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. We are back after a long layoff, so we're going to have a good amount to talk about. The schedule just came out this week, so that's obviously going to be one of the things we're going to mention. We'll go over the Olympic team and what we've seen so far down in Rio, as far as basketball. I've watched a lot of other Olympics. I've actually really enjoyed the Olympics this year, and I haven't watched a lot the last couple times around. So watch a lot of Olympic stuff, and then we're going to get to the Southwest Division preview for our site. We're going to be rattling off for the next 6 weeks, which will take us right into training camp, so it kind of works out perfectly. We'll rattle off a division each week, and we're going to start with the most interesting one, the Southwest. And to bring that on, I brought on the most interesting man in the world, Nick Llewellyn.
Wow, what a huge sell. Thanks. I look forward to living up to those expectations for everyone.
Right. Yep. And you got to be drinking Dos Equis while we're doing this.
Yeah, it'd make, again, for a more interesting podcast, so that might be a change.
That's right. Yeah. So what do you want to start with first? You want to talk Olympics or schedule?
Let's talk Olympics, because unfortunately, Anthony Davis and Shuri has made this not even tangentially related to the Pelicans, so we should obviously start there.
Yeah, I'll be honest. At first, I was not going to really watch any Olympic games at all because Anthony's not there. I do have a rooting interest in Anthony Davis, and it wasn't so interesting me watching these other guys. And this doesn't even have, like, some of the more fun guys, in my opinion, to watch. Like, if I took a list of the guys I most enjoy watching in the NBA, I think Durant is on this team, and Curry's not there. Thompson, I'm not super excited by. I can't even, like, Irving every once in a while could be pretty fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
Just offensively. That's about all I could say.
It feels like the most boring team, at least in my lifetime, since the bronze medal team. For
right.
Sure. Like, I just, it's, and that, they kind of went in with that expectation of, like, oh, we're going to be the defensive team in the Olympics people haven't seen before, which is a fine way to build yourself, but when you're sort of pedestrian defensively and also just boring offensively, there's still the big alley-oops, but wire to wire, it's not a fun team to watch.
No, it's not. And like, Carmelo is the big name for all of a sudden for all the interviews and everything, and Carmelo is, like, the worst possible player for me. I've disliked Carmelo for a really, really long time.
Carmelo's tough too, because in international basketball, like, just the rules at least allow him to have, I think he makes more sense in international basketball, but he still becomes just as difficult to watch. I don't know, he feels like a super glue guy in these Olympics teams, but when he's the best player on the team, or like the stuff that, not the best, obviously, but it's clearly like he's supposed to be the veteran leader. Mm-hmm. It's just boring, or it's just kind of lame compared to the last two teams, especially.
Well, here's what I'll say about Carmelo and why I think, because that's always the selling point that comes out of these Olympics is Carmelo was amazing. I think it was in the 2012 one. He led the team in scoring even. And we're talking about a team with LeBron.
Yeah,
he
had like 18 points a game or something. Yeah.
And so that always comes out. But the reason why Carmelo is so effective is because they finally have somebody else on the team who is undoubtedly the best player.
Oh, for sure.
Other than Carmelo. So they can tell Carmelo, you know what? LeBron deserves the ball in his hands more than you. Kyrie Irving, he's a point guard, and he's an NBA championship. We're going to put the ball in his hands, and you play off of him. So suddenly, he goes from being the guy who demands the ball, and we get away from all those horrible ISOs and post-ups.
Yeah.
And now he's the guy receiving the ball with a little damage done to the defense already, and suddenly he's a dynamic player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because really his two functions on those previous teams were to be a guy who could shoot over everyone when a creator made something happen. So he's getting his wide open looks from three, and then he would just bully people in the post because he could run with guys that were smaller than him, and he's just a force of nature inside on those guys that are smaller, right? So when you have someone like LeBron James and Chris Paul on the floor being the creators for him, he looks all worldly. I think that actually speaks to another problem with this current Olympic roster construction. You really only have one dynamic ball handler and distributor in Kyrie Irving, right? And so the advantage of the other teams was never our size because it was basically Dwight Howard and then a bunch of wings and, you know, a point guard, okay?
Well, I got to break in here because Kyle Lowry
is
a fantastic point guard.
That's fine.
But he doesn't get the minutes because Mr. Duke Krzyzewski has to play Irving. Has to play Irving, despite the fact that Kyle Lowry, in a vacuum, if I had to have one, if there was one game being played today for my life, and those are the two point guards I could pick me from, I'm taking Kyle Lowry every time, hands down.
I think that's fine. I mean, defend
your Duke
boy.
No,
I wasn't going to defend my Duke boy. I was just saying he's the only one. But if you want to say Kyle Lowry is the great unknown at point guard, sure. I mean, he definitely lives up to the standards of that Chris Paul set in previous Olympic teams. So you can argue that it's minutes, but I don't think Kyle Lowry comes in and makes the offense that much better. So my point simply that I think what you're seeing from Carmelo is he's actually taking on that creator role, and he isn't as otherworldly because, as we were discussing earlier, he was always benefiting from having sometimes two All-NBA point guards on the floor at the same time. Now he really only has one because the other one's not playing, which it's cool. You like Kyle Lowry. I'm not going to argue against that, but,
I was trying to get a rise out of you. I was going hard at Irving. Although I'll be honest,
I'm actually not a Kyrie Irving fan. He played 11 games at Duke. So it's not like I had this Duke connection to him. I think it's weird that everyone's like, man, Krzyzewski just rides for Kyrie Irving. It's like, dude, he has guys who stay for 4 years when they could leave after one. I don't know that Kyrie's really his guy, but either way.
You know, it's a shame. It's a shame Austin Rivers isn't on this team.
Well, he's better than most of the players out there, if you remember that tweet from 2014. actually, though, he probably would help the defense. I mean,
no,
it's looked pretty bad. Okay.
No. Well, yeah, it looked pretty bad, but he wouldn't help it.
I think it's a push.
It might be, because their defense has been pretty awful. Like,
yeah.
This three straight games where teams are approaching 100 points. Like, what do you do with that? This is a team that, if it actually was playing out to its defensive potential, another team shouldn't score more than 60 or 70 against them.
Yeah, and that's actually the one takeaway I do have from this Olympic Games is I'm coming around this idea that defense is a lot about effort for NBA players. And some of that may even just become down to how they spend their energy. Because if you watch snippets of certain games, Kyrie Irving, on an international level, can be a solid defender to a very good one. But if you watch two games later, he's just not making the effort out there. And I feel like this is not the try-hard Olympic team of 2008, where those guys wanted to blow everyone out to prove we were still, you know, the front runner in international basketball. Now it just feels like we're going to get gold. Who cares if we win games by 3 or 50? Let's just try to get on to the next one. And I mean, I guess that's fine, but honestly, it's not enough to make me tune in every game and like set my clock right around it like I have in the past.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know how you feel about that, but I just feel like it's a really uncompelling storyline.
Yeah, I don't, and this isn't going to, you know, encourage anyone to watch these games, but I do want to say something here about like the fact that the defense is so bad. If you just take a look at this last game, and this is again a game where, I mean, the USA was up fairly big and then just fell apart at the end, and they were rolling with their starters at that point. Like, if I told you, if you had this roster in front of you, and obviously Harrison Barnes is the Christian Laettner. He's not playing a minute. Or he shouldn't. But if I told you that Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green were the two guys who were getting the least amount of minutes of the rest of the players, wouldn't that shock the hell out of you?
Like Jimmy Butler definitely would. I think some of the Draymond stuff might be that Krzyzewski doesn't really know how to use him,
which is crazy. Like Draymond, like if you want to stop somebody, if you have a team that's going on a 12-2 run, you put Draymond Green in there to mess somebody up. I mean, that's maybe not like that brutally, but yeah, he's gonna just get into that mess. Like he's gonna like break up the plays. He's going to make things not work as well. He's going to wrestle people all around. Like he's going to screw up the other team's flow. And if you really want to do it, you put in Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler. You don't go to DeMar DeRozan and DeAndre Jordan.
Like, yeah, I don't understand the respect DeMar DeRozan is getting. I mean, this feels, again, it's just so different from other years because there were so many no-shows this year that so many guys just ended up on the roster, and it just feels so haphazard, but we're still going to win gold. So, I mean, it's fine, but it's just, again, I just don't care about it. So before we move on, though, I do want to say one thing. The women's team, have you watched them?
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah, they're
That's,
amazing.
Like, this is not hyperbole. This is just my personal opinion.
It's good basketball.
It's the best basketball, like international basketball from the USA I've watched in a long time. It's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always this cliche about girls that like, oh, well, they're just so great at fundamentals and all they can do is shoot or whatever. And some people mock that idea as like, yeah, but it's not athletic or entertaining. This is a super athletic team. And I'm sorry, but watching a basketball team every time they get a rebound and it's immediately two quick outlet passes to somebody in stride is just so fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it makes you wish you could actually see one of those fast paced teams that they're always talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so great. And in some ways, I think it's kind of a bummer we have to sit and talk about this really. And I don't mean you and I personally. I just mean, I guess, Twitter and the internet and the basketball world. We have to talk about this totally boring men's team that'll limp to a gold medal when we should really be talking about this ridiculous women's team that, I mean, they were up like 32-7 at one point on China today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah. So let me ask you a quick question. Any chance the United States doesn't make gold?
On the men's side?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
I mean, if I saw that they lost in the, you know, semifinals and are going to be playing in the consolation game for bronze, I wouldn't even blink in. I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
You wouldn't be surprised if they didn't medal.
So I would expect that they're going to medal, but the way the playoffs work out, right, you end up in a bracket, and either you're playing for gold and silver, or you're playing for bronze.
So if they
or
okay,
nothing.
Sorry, I just misunderstood. So you wouldn't be surprised if they ended up in the bronze medal game.
Yeah.
Okay. I was actually about to say that's the one thing that would surprise me. I could see them making it against Spain or something, and just like losing by 10, and it would be kind of perfect for Carmelo Anthony, after he's made this big deal of, like, I've won an NCAA championship, I'll have won 3 gold medals, I think I've had a really strong career, just ignoring what I did in the NBA, if he, after said that, just ended up with a silver or bronze. Like, yeah, Carmelo, this is why. We wanted to love you, but this is it.
Yeah. Yeah, Carmelo and DeMarcus Cousins, they can hang out together.
Man, we haven't even talked about Boogie on this team. I don't think we have time.
I don't really.
That's too much.
All right, let's get the schedule. So they released the schedule this week. There were some immediately some things that were picked out in Twitter and posted around, but we'll review the highlights. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and tell you in depth on there are five Saturday games in this part of the thing, and they have more rest than us. And we're not going to get that depth. We're going to basically hit some highlights. And I think your first highlight you wanted to talk about was the beginning of the schedule. So what is your take on the opening of this next season for us?
Well, I guess even before we get to the opening, which is the thing that jumps out at me, there's a lot of talk about strength of schedule, and people are pretty bummed out that we have a rough go of it again, it appears. But the way that the schedule is constructed, you basically get 30 games against the other conference. So being in the stronger conference, you're already at a disadvantage. And the Pelicans are going to play four games against their division opponents and four games against six conference opponents. So right there, if you're in the Western Conference and in the best division like we are, I mean, it's going to be a slog to the playoffs, right? And so the teams that are outside of our division but in our conference that will play four times are Golden State, Oklahoma City, Portland, Phoenix, the Lakers, and Denver. So if we start right off at the top of the schedule, what sticks out to me are within our first seven games, two against Golden State and one against San Antonio. And so I'm not a believer in momentum necessarily, but right. I don't really want to see us get off to even a 3-4 start. And I just don't see if there's any way that we're going to start off with a winning record against having played those three teams.
Yeah. Yeah. And our Denver, Golden State, San Antonio with the at San Antonio on the second night of back-to-back, which shouldn't matter at that part of the season. Like,
yeah,
everybody should be fresh. Three games in.
Especially after we supposedly added so much depth.
Right. Well, supposedly.
Well, I mean, almost certainly. Well, but I'm not willing to trust anything yet.
Not until
I've considered too much right. Pelican fan.
We're gonna just hope we can get through training camp without most of the team being injured, because last year we had four healthy people. Like, it was pretty crazy. So it's not even those first three games. People are talking about it stretches past that point that they're worried about. And so let me just ask this flat out. Let's say the first 10 games happen, and maybe we had a key injury, maybe we just had some really bad luck, and we end up walking out of those first 10 games with a 3-7 record, or even 2-8. Do you think that the season's over at that point already?
Oh, no. I don't think it's over. I mean, over in terms of the playoffs?
Like, yeah.
So for that to be true, what we'd basically be betting on is that the morale of the team is so low, they couldn't reach sort of a theoretical peak then. Because obviously, mathematically, the playoffs are still available. And you still have Anthony Davis. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I think this is such an annoying way to answer your question. I'm sorry. I don't think that would be the case if we went 2-8. But I think it's a possibility that it could just be – do you remember last season when we started off so horribly and it was just a bummer? Like, everything around the team was depressing. And I remember, like, the lowest point for me was actually when Kendrick Perkins made that joke of we need a win like old people need soft shoes, because what does that even mean? But just embodied how desperate we were to have something good happen.
Yeah.
I don't know if this team is resilient enough to really claw back from that again. And they may very well be. And I don't know that 2-8 is enough to kind of break that mental streak. I just think that opportunity is there. So if we were sitting November 12th and we had, you know, finished 2-8, I'd be a little bit worried, because I do think that type of stuff matters.
So one of the things that I always like to look at when I'm looking at a series of games is the tendency people have is they look at teams and they say, okay, is this team better than my team? And that's all they look at. And if they think that team is better, it's a loss. And if they think that their team is better, it's a win. So like in a vacuum, you say, is my team better than Denver?
Right.
And if you feel you're better than Denver, it's a win and it's a loss. But there's always like shades of gray. Like in the real world, if you're playing a team like, say, Portland, which is going to probably win 40 to 50 games, something in there this year again, probably. And we'll talk about that in another one of these previews. Do you think that that's just like a loss, or do you think there's probably like a 60% chance that they're going to beat us, which still gives us a pretty good chance? Like, it's not necessarily just a loss.
Right, yeah, the way I think about these things is a probability distribution, right? So, and like, just to do it simply in my head, I just do a split like that, where if Portland was on the map, I'd say that's probably 60% chance, 40% them. And then right. I try to get a rough range of what I think is likely. And this is, I know this sounds like it's mathematical, but it's really still just trying to use that intuition in my head. And I think what's frustrating about these first 10 games is Golden State and San Antonio are both teams that I just count as a one for them. And if we ever beat them, it's a surprise, and that's great. But I'm never going to bet Pelicans on Golden State.
You actually went exactly where I was going with it. Because I look at these first 10 games, and sure, there's games against Los Angeles, the Lakers, not the Clippers.
Yeah.
The Suns, Sacramento Kings, the Milwaukee Bucks, Denver. Like, there are five very winnable games in here. But the issue is you put those five up, let's say we're a better team than them, what are we going to win, three or four of them probably?
Yeah.
But then we flip it over, and you look at teams like three of these games are against Golden State, and San Antonio. And in my head, that's like a 95% loss chance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just round up to 100 because there's no reason to consider that 0.05 win. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, so, I mean, my take is when I look at those first the slate of 10 games, if we walk out of that 4-6, I'm happy.
Oh, absolutely. That's to me, the range is of likely outcomes is probably like 2 to 5 wins. So anything above 3, I'm pretty ecstatic about. But it's just that the 2 and 3 wins, like 2 and 8, 3 and 7, that have me concerned, not really for any basketball reasons, because I think, barring a serious injury, what will be true October 25th will probably be true by then. It's just that's a tough stretch of games. So to me, it's about sort of the soft skills going on behind the team. And I just – that stuff kind of worries me.
All right. So I guess what we're telling everybody is brace yourself for the first 10 games, and if we come out of it even 5-5, we should be feeling pretty damn good about what we saw so far.
And we had a rough start to the season last year.
That was really bad.
And all of the confidence we had – doing this last season is completely gone. So I'm hoping we're going to reverse jinx ourselves.
Right. Okay.
Into 5 wins.
All right. So is there anything else in the schedule that just pops out at you? You're like, wow, that's rough, or that's really simple, or like that makes you what you want to talk about in particular?
Yeah, I think so. The six conference teams that we got are actually really interesting, because depending on how you feel about a couple of them, it's either a pretty decent draw or a pretty bad one. So if you think Oklahoma City is going to kind of retain that upper echelon flavor, which I don't mean second best in the West, but let's say like top 4 or 5, that's a pretty rough draw for us. But then you've got Portland, Denver. Those are two teams that you can kind of argue your way around a little bit below average to pretty above average season, you know, win distribution. So to me, it's so easy to just guess the strength of schedule is going to be pretty high, but we see teams drop off all the time. And so just looking at the schedule, there's part of me that's going, you know, but maybe Los Angeles is still going to be bad. Phoenix might have another terrible season where everything goes wrong for them. What if Portland has one injury? Then all of a sudden that's, you know, 12 games right there that make this season look completely different if we catch them on the right nights.
Yep. And that's of course what McNamara always said is the most important factor isn't even the schedule. It's who's playing in the games.
Yeah.
Are we going to get lucky and catch the games against an injured star or not? And he was always complaining because it always felt like, no, the guy always is back in time, or he gets hurt after we play them or something.
Yeah, and to that point, like, if you look at November 14th through November 29th, the back half of that month, let's just say Portland has, like, C.J. McCollough pops a hammy or something, is out for those two games. That automatically looks like a kind of nice stretch of games now, right? And so we could be – there's a reality at least where we're talking about, wow, November was actually a pretty decent month after those three games in October. So – and when you get to the end of the season, and that's the difference between being a 40 and 42 win team – that's the difference between the 8th and the 9th seed most years. So that's the part of this that when you're a team like the Pelicans and not an all-star team in Oakland, that really matters. It's, again, who's playing when you're actually meeting those teams up.
Yeah. The one month I found the most fascinating, and at first I just kind of like flew by it and didn't even register it because it just felt like it was a stretch of meh teams. There isn't any team that stands out as particularly interesting or hard or easy necessarily. It's February.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was my next one is I went through the season twice and just had like the months written on a piece of paper and just kind of gave them a grade of like easy to hard. And I went back and I noticed I put February as like pretty easy the first time. And then I was like moderately difficult the second time because each one of these teams I go through and I'm like, I'm not really sure how tough they're going to be.
Yeah. But the biggest part about February is all but three games are on the road.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're traveling the entire month, it feels like. And they're even starting off, like, on January 31st in Toronto. So that's a long trip, too. So it's a lot of travel that month over probably one of the softest part of the schedules. If that had been, like, flipped and it was home, that was, like, the stretch where we always have, like, a stretch in the season where, you know, they surprisingly win, like, 9 of 11 games or go on a 7-game winning streak and everybody starts to get excited. Maybe they're putting it all together, but really usually behind it, it's just they ran into a really soft piece of their schedule and tore through it.
Yeah.
This could have been that, except it's all on the road. And I know Ryan Anderson is gone, and he is – the road Ryan Anderson was a real thing the past few years, and he was terrible on the road. But I still don't know how this team is going to perform on the road, and I'm not going to sit here and say Solomon Hill is going to be a road warrior. I have no idea. So that's the general statement about Solomon Hill is I have no idea.
I don't know.
It'll be very interesting to see how even rotations work out on this team. After we figure out if Kupon and Tyreke Evans are going to play a minute, like Kupon feels more realistic to me, but still I have no idea like what was realistic. Like so, let me ask you this question: would you be surprised if I told you that Kupon was going to not play a single game this season? Would that like shock you? You'd be like speechless.
No, I wouldn't be speechless. It wouldn't shock me. I'd be a little surprised. But the kind of surprise where you're mostly just disappointed and you're really just surprised you could get this disappointed again. You know what I mean? Like when you're a kid and you're hoping for snow the next day and it doesn't happen. Right. This is a uniquely Southern experience, I just realized. But when you're hoping for a snow day and it doesn't happen and you're like, I should have known better. I've done this 100 times.
Now, my worst experience, I lived in Massachusetts. It started snowing at 6 p.m. It dropped 18 inches on us and I went to school the next day.
Man,
that's disappointing. How did that happen? There's just no way that made sense. 18 inches, and we went to school the next day. Ugh. Anyways, I'm still upset about that. So it wouldn't be shocking if Kupon didn't play a minute this next season. But what if I told you he played every game?
That like, also really wouldn't surprise me.
Right. We have no idea. Like, there's. Like,
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he started. The first game of the season was, you know, a 24 to 30 minute just glue guy that was in like two or three of our top rotations, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I none of that would shock me.
Yeah. I want to know before I decide like where I think there are actual holes in this rotation, I think Kupon could, and again, this is true last year. If Kupon had played last year, we had a whole different conversation for a lot of that season. Just he fills a lot of needs in one particular place where there's nothing behind him. And now we have some stuff behind him, so that's okay. It's still a little thin. So,
yeah, but I think, that sort of two-guard, three position with Kupon in it is still way more interesting.
Right.
Because I don't really want Etuan Moore to try to be what Quincy Pondexter was 2 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That's a pretty poor facsimile.
So I do want to say this. I am actually really angry about one part of the schedule. The end of the schedule, the last four games, And if
I noticed this too. And I think this is baloney.
If our prediction is that this team is fighting and they're like at the bubble and they're like, you know, 39-39 at this point in the season with four games to go, or 37-38 and you know, with five to go, like this is crunch time, and all four games are on the road. They're not against Golden State is there, but there's also a game against Denver and a game against the Lakers. But the thing that makes me the most mad is the final closing game of the season is in Portland. I do not want my team's fate to possibly come down to a Portland Trailblazer game, because I hate Portland with a passion. I hate those guys.
The thing I hate about that is it's a West Coast trip to end your season. I think that's – and I know making the schedule is really hard, but that just annoys the crap out of me. But, like, see, like, you're the end of our game – or end of our season is April 4th, and then the season goes on for another week that our team is just on the road – in a completely different time zone. So it's not even like we're doing the Texas three-step and then Memphis to end the season, where you're like, okay, that's a reasonable – that's the same part of the country. This should be something that's happening in, like, January. And right. Instead it's saved for the last four games of the season. And I just think it's so annoying.
Yeah. Last game of the season in Portland, second night of a back-to-back.
After being in Los Angeles.
After being in Los Angeles, so they partied.
Yeah.
Oh, hate it.
I don't know anything about Tyreek's health personally. I'm not a doctor, but I'm 100% sure he's not playing in that Portland game.
I will say this, though. The very last game of the season when we made the playoffs, that was a pretty exciting game. And you know, maybe that will – having Portland be the team that we beat will make me feel better, but there's something about it being Portland – that just makes me mad. I hate Portland.
Yeah, you've been ranting about Portland for 3 years now.
Okay, I'll stop ranting about Portland. anything else particularly stick out at you, or do you want to move on to our Southwest Division now?
Yeah, I think...
Which doesn't have Portland in it, so everybody's safe.
Yeah, I think I'd rather talk about the Southwest Division, because I think every one of these teams is really interesting, and outside of the six teams in your conference you have to play four times, this is probably the biggest key to your playoff hopes, right? Because this is the sort of the biggest slice of the schedule.
Right.
And last year, four of these teams went to the playoffs. That's really, really good. So that just shows it's such an annoying level of competition for the Pelicans.
It is. It's been that way for a long time,
though.
Yeah. And let's start with the best of the lot, the San Antonio Spurs. At least I'm assuming they're the best of the lot. Do you have any disagreement about that being the case?
Oh, no. They could sleep for 15 games. I'm pretty sure they would still be the best team at this.
Okay. All right. So basically what happened was Tim Duncan retired. They went after Kevin Durant and failed. And they instead replaced Tim Duncan with Pau Gasol and Dwayne Dedmon out of Orlando, who's an athlete. If you don't know who he is, he's just an athletic backup center who can run very fast and has Omer Asik-style hands. And
he's a better – yeah, he can destroy some shots. I actually have some thoughts on Dwayne Dedmon, but go on.
Yeah, he's a shot blocker, yeah. True. He just – he can't – he can destroy some shots on the offensive end, too, when he fails to catch
for
them.
Sure.
Then the David West, the Spurs didn't put a ring on it, so he left, and now he's going to be going to Golden State, and they replaced him with David Lee for the minimum. And basically, they signed Manu Ginobili back with a big, huge, giant chunk of change as the thanks for being an awesome shooting guard for so long for us, and here's a giant payday at the end of your career. That's pretty much it. Like, I guess they drafted DeJounte Murray. I'm not even certain if I'm saying his first name right. At the end of the draft, he was an athletic point guard who apparently likes turnovers a lot. Exciting. So, first off, are they as good as last year?
I mean, I'm going to go with no, because they were amazing last year. So again, we talked about this, I think, one of the earlier podcasts you and I did about how freaky it was to have both Golden State's regular season and San Antonio's regular season happen at once. So mm-hmm. even if you were to run that team back, I don't think they have that type of performance. And when guys that are Tony's age and Manu's age get a year older, it really starts to matter. And I think, unfortunately, this team at some point is going to have to rely on someone like Kyle Anderson to grow up really quickly. And I don't know that that'll happen, and I'm pretty sure it won't. So, yeah, I don't think they're as good as last season. So, yeah, they might only win 55 games.
So, quick question for you.
Yeah.
Because this all rotates around center position. Pau Gasol. Like, Tim Duncan, by every measure out there, was still one of the most impactful defenders in the league last year, even at the age of 39. He was always in the right position. He always contested shots properly. Pau Gasol, by almost every measure, was a abysmal defensive player who helped submarine the Chicago defense. But he's still an effective offensive player, and Tim Duncan's offensive numbers and efficiency did take a big hit last year.
Yeah.
So is there any chance that what Pau Gasol brings to the table offensively and his ability to pass and move the ball in a system that's based on passing and moving the ball will replace or better what Tim Duncan could do last year and the defensive situation won't be as bad? Or is it that just a pipe dream?
I don't know that he'll be able to replace it just by – I mean, so you and I got – at least I tweeted back at you when you said you thought this was a really bad signing. I actually kind of get it and like the Pau Gasol signing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that you make up for what you're what Tim's leaving on defense. Having said that, team – like I think it's pretty clear that they – Tim took on a different role in the playoffs, which is fine. But it's that was just there that, you know, he – only averaged like 21 minutes per game. So, and he averaged 25 minutes in the regular season. So I don't really know what the expectation is for Pau Gasol, because as much as the note was, oh, LaMarcus is never going to play center, they definitely, when other teams were going small, had him at that position and had Kawhi at the four, and then, you know, they can put Danny Green at three with Manu. There are ways for them to make this, make rotations that are pretty impactful on defense, and maybe this is dumb, but I just believe in their system. And I don't think it makes Pau Gasol a good defender, but would it surprise you if we were looking back at the season where we were like, how the heck was Pau an even average defender? And then we're just like, oh yeah, he played for the Spurs. So it just automatically happened. And again, I actually, to go back to this point kind of early, I think Dwayne Dedmon could actually be pretty good on this team. I don't think he'll get a bunch of minutes, and I don't think he's going to be, I don't know, a big sleeper or whatever, but I could see us, again, looking back at the end of the season, being like, that guy only got 10 or 12 minutes, but ended up giving really great defensive minutes for them during the regular season.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if he turns in, like, the way I look at it is he's Aaron Baines for them a couple of years ago, where Baines just came in and he was the hammer on a pick and roll over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah.
So if Dedmon can catch the ball, offensively, he can be that. Defensively, like there's no way you're ever going to have Dwayne Dedmon in any of your finishing lineups. So he just has to be able to protect the rim against second units.
Yeah.
Maybe he could do that pretty easily.
Yeah, so. He's definitely Aaron Baines and not – I think a lot of people have looked at him and just this week have been like, oh, they got their next Boban, and that's not what's happening here. But they – so I guess to me the question is more – given Powell's deficiencies, you've got Dedmon. What you have going on at the four and the five, can you just kind of recreate Tim Duncan's impact? Not maybe his impact on defense, but just the ability to keep their heads above water and make the rest of it work.
All right.
And I think there's a chance they can. But again, if they don't, they're still a pretty awesome team.
So we're going to throw matchups out because matchups mean everything to this, so it's kind of a stupid way to ambush you with this question. But I'm going to do it anyways. You don't know who the opponent is. They are constructing in the playoffs, so limited minutes for subs, but they are basically constructing the lineup that they're going to roll with in the most important moments. What is the San Antonio's five-man lineup in those minutes?
I would go Parker, Ginobili, Green, Leonard, Aldridge.
Okay.
Where'd you go?
I'd have Parker out and Mills in.
Ooh. Yeah, because I was actually thinking about how do I get Patty Mills in there.
I think Parker's and we said this a million times about every San Antonio player that it's time for them to finally. But Parker, if I don't think he's got the defensive chops that Patty Mills does.
Well, it's kind of a. a simultaneous thing, right? Like, I'm fine with Parker or Ginobili being in their finishing five, but the part of that that stings is putting them both out there.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, if you said
Bogart's the big scorer wing player on the other team.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you said, oh, we'll take off Ginobili and put in Patty Mills, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of small, but I get it that, you know, you've got at least somebody to make up for Parker's mistakes. It's just really hard. On the other hand, they are the Spurs. I don't know. Because as I look at it, I'm like, well, Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green still exist, so maybe it'll just all work out for them.
Yeah. Kawhi Leonard, wow. The guy's still, like, managing to be one of the quietest superstars we have. Like, I still have situations where I'm, like, thinking of, like, the top five players, and I'm always like, I had somebody else in the top five this year, and I can't remember who it is.
Yeah.
I have to think for a long time, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, Kawhi Leonard.
Well, what's funny is I actually just want to keep coming back to, like, trying to give the Spurs just 45 to 50 wins because Tim Duncan's gone. And it's really easy to do, actually, until you remember Kawhi Leonard's on the team. You're like, oh, well, they're probably definitely getting 50.
Yeah.
I mean, it's short of his injury. Because the rest of the team is, I mean, it's good, but it's not, you know, compelling or awe-inspiring in any way. But once you throw him in there, they get so much versatility and he can do so many things. It just completely changes them to where...
And he's a defensive monster.
Exactly. So where you're talking about putting Patty Mills over Tony Parker, I get the small upgrade or the upgrade in defense. I mean, it makes sense to me, but I'm also like, will it even matter if Kawhi Leonard's out there?
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you're playing the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard's guarding Chris Paul in the important minutes.
Absolutely, you know, just, yeah.
That's the reality, so. Yeah. All right, so we got to make a prediction. So how many wins does this San Antonio Spurs team walk away with this year? Last year they had 67, which, again, should be mentioned, that was the most any Greg Popovich San Antonio Spurs team had won by, like, six. I think they had 61 one year.
Yeah.
So. It was a significant leap. So how many they got this year?
I think I'm going to go with 55.
Okay. I have 56, we're pretty close.
If I had a range, it'd be from 50 to 55.
Okay. So you think they're more likely to be under 55 than over 55?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't think I can drop them that far because... Kawhi, and as much as I've never been a huge fan of Aldridge defensively in this system, he was pretty amazing last year.
Oh, yeah.
So
I could just see Greg coming back after that last season and being like, we'll rest 20 games here and there, more than he did last year. So to me, I think it's he pushed it a little bit last season, and I don't think I don't think we'll ever see that again.
Right.
So.
Okay. Let's move on to the next team in the Southwest Division. Which we've selected to be the Dallas Mavericks. Their offseason, they basically signed the cast-offs of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, the other guys of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, the guys of the Golden State Warriors said, well, you're not good enough for our team, so we're going to let you go so we can get Kevin Durant. So goodbye, Andrew Bogut. Goodbye, Harrison Barnes. And the Mavericks just... flew in, and they could not sign Harrison Barnes to a full max contract fast enough, and then they traded for Andrew Bogut. They also re-signed Deron Williams. They re-signed Devin Harris. They re-signed Dwight Powell. And so their team is essentially, it's last year's team, but instead of Zaza, they have Andrew, and instead of Chandler Parsons, they have Harrison Barnes. So... what are you thinking about this? Like, does this team strike any fear into your heart, even a little bit?
The only way they strike fear in me is Rick Carlisle.
Okay.
Because I honestly think you could take that guy to the YMCA and just give him, like, five accountants, and they'd be a decent summer league team. I don't know why that happens, but he just does that. So, like, yeah, first of all, I've become like an unofficial Harrison Barnes apologist by some unfortunate tweets, I guess. But I could see Andrew Bogut actually having a pretty good year just because I feel like there's been a few cast-off centers that have done well in Dallas. And so I don't think this team is going to win anywhere. Like, they're not going to go north of 50 because they just really can't, one hopes.
Yeah, I can't believe you're even saying the win number of 50. Last year they won 42 games.
Yeah, no, I think that's I guess what I'm saying is I don't think there's even a like low probability chance they get something that high. I think their ceiling is we should get to the win stuff later. Okay. So I just threw that number out there as like a hard up. But the thing to me is, and this is the thing I've kind of been saying about Harrison Barnes for a long time, is that you can't really tell me that you know how good he's going to be because we haven't seen it. He's been the fourth guy on a history-defining team.
Right.
So it's what happens next is just a kind of a big unknown. And when you're replacing Chandler Parsons, a guy that I'm not that high on, with Harrison Barnes, I could see a chance where he improves the team in that way.
So here's what I'll have to say about the Dallas Mavericks. Deron Williams better be amazing this year, or they're just dead in the water.
He doesn't have to be. J.J. Barea.
So, okay. Their point guard has to be amazing this year, because they have nobody outside of, and I was actually looking at J.J. Barea when I said that, and even Devin Harris, somewhat he's lost his step, but J.J. and Deron Williams are the only players on this team who can do that first crack in an opponent's defense. Like, there's Justin Anderson, no way. Wes Matthews, no way. Harrison Barnes, no way. Even if Harrison Barnes like was hiding a whole bunch of things because he didn't just have the opportunity, he's not going to be enough of a ball handler to be able to take a pick and roll and attack, or grab a post up and break everybody down and start an offense. Like, he's just not. Like, maybe he'll start moving there. So you can still enter the ball to Dirk and everybody will freak out and be like, oh crap, and overreact to Dirk, but that's it. That's the only other option they have, besides Deron and JJ going nuts on the perimeter. And those two guys will, especially JJ, will freely and happily try all you want them to. But I can't see this team being a good offense, even like at some point. Like, I don't care if you have one of the best coaches in the league. You can't turn chicken shit into chicken salad. You just can't do it. It just doesn't work. Mm. And I think that's where they are. And honestly, like, Zaza is a better basketball player than Andrew Bogut. Hands down, I will not, like, there's no way in hell that you can tell me that if you put in a vacuum Andrew Bogut on a team or Zaza on a team, that Andrew Bogut is going to give more for you over 82 games than Zaza is. I don't buy it. And so they got weaker in the middle, which means they're going to be relying more on Dirk and Dwight Powell and Salamejri. I don't even know how to say his name. Like, there's just their interior big defense is awful.
Yeah, like, their defense that's never going to be. So I think you think I have an inflated sense of this team. I think they could get back to 42 games. Like, that's kind of where I've got them right now. And the sense I'm making of this is those three bigs you mentioned besides Dirk, I think that the nice thing about all of them is that they're really thick, and you could potentially have JJ and Deron Williams coming off of screens from each of those guys. And so, that's a huge advantage to both of their first steps and getting into the paint and making wreaking havoc. Having said that, I don't really expect them to – I think they're going to be a terrible defense and a surprisingly good offense, and I think they're just going to have – I don't want to call it luck, but it's just going to be that thing where they make it to 40 to 42 wins and sneak into the eighth seed. That's just what I think they're going to do.
To me, if they win 35 games, I will be surprised. 35 games will be a surprise. I fully expect this team to fall into the 30 to 33 range at this point.
Oof.
So, like, I can't see it. Like, I love Dirk Nowitzki. I think Wes Matthews is a nice, tough dude. Just the rest of this team is garbage. It's garbage.
You can't say garbage. Harrison Barnes is objectively garbage.
I can't, too.
No, you can't.
I can, too. I didn't even like him coming out of college.
Yeah, well, neither did I.
Like, Harrison Barnes is a bad, bad basketball player. Okay, that was a little tough. But he's not good. So, anyways. That's my take. Dallas Mavericks I'm going to peg them at 33 wins.
You got them at 42. That's what I'll stick
okay.
to.
42. Is there anything else you want? Like, the weirdest thing about this team that I just can't figure out, and I had to look at their roster like four or five times. Like, they're not even – they don't have a whole lot of depth on this team either.
Yeah, I think they actually have like a couple of signings left to be made, right? Because there's only 10 guys on this roster right now.
Well, I mean, Seth Curry has been not official. I think he just recently signed it, so he's probably not on.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But, again, is Seth Curry a difference maker in any way?
Yeah, if he learns how to ball handle like his brother, it's on. if he has that one essential skill of a point guard, then, yeah, this team's definitely going for
right. So Seth Curry, we didn't really mention him ever. He should probably be part of the team. Charlie Villanueva, I think, has been gotten another year out of them. But the rest of the team are just like make good contracts. Wow. And I'm kind of like Quincy Acey. I forgot about Quincy Acey. Quincy Acey, who is basically, I don't know, what is Quincy Acey? Lance Thomas?
I think a little bit less.
Pelicans less? Yeah, I mean.
Pelicans
that's
Lance
the
Thomas?
Kind of
yeah.
Pelicans less Thomas kind of player. Yeah. Like, and that gives you some nice energy, might have an impact for a couple minutes in a game, and if you haven't played more than that, you're pretty much screwed.
Yep.
Dante Cunningham-ish. So, like, it just feels like it's really thin, except for a point guard, where they got Williams, Harris, and Barea. But at shooting guard, it's Matthews and Seth Curry and Justin Anderson, who had a kind of up-and-down season.
I'm just going with coaches, man.
Yeah, at some point, coaches just don't do enough. I'm sorry. Mm. It reaches a tipping point, and even a coach can't plaster over all the crap. So let's move on to the next team. And I think this is actually, in my opinion, I think this team is the most interesting team in the Southwest Division outside of the Pelicans, because Pelicans are my team. We're talking the Memphis Grizzlies. And in the offseason, the Memphis Grizzlies gave Mike Conley the biggest contract in the history of the NBA, which we'll probably be hearing next year as well, that someone else got it. It's just he happened to be a free agent and signed a max. And he had a lot of years of service. So Mike Conley came back. They drafted Wade Baldwin out of Vanderbilt. They brought Chandler Parsons in. And then they also basically are hoping that Jamichael Green, Jarrell Martin, and Jordan Adams, who were all the Jays they've drafted over the last 3 years and have barely played any minutes, will come in and contribute, because that's pretty much all they did. They still have Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Mike Conley are the guys joined by Chandler Parsons with a very old Vince Carter. I forgot one very important signing, didn't I? James Ennis. The Pelicans' own James Ennis is signed to back up Chandler Parsons, and James should feel really good right now because, of course, Chandler Parsons' injury history suggests that James Ennis might get some nice chances to play. But this team, first off, is there any team that you can think of in the league that has a higher chance of just being completely destroyed by injuries?
Besides the Pelicans?
I'm not talking about it.
Yeah.
The Pelicans aren't having any injuries, man. They gave all their injuries to Tyre Cavins.
Yeah. Well,
yes, carry all of them.
So like, I haven't done my full predictions and given each team a win total. And as soon as I think about Memphis, the thing that scares me is, like, right now, if to do it on this podcast, I want to give them a huge range of win totals.
Right.
Because what if Marc Gasol goes down and then Chandler Parsons misses 20 games? And so you're left
Which is
with
pretty normal.
Tony Allen, who's 34, and Vince Carter, who's, what, 35 now?
I think he's 37.
He's 39. Oh, my God. So you've got those two guys spackling together. And then, I mean, Zach Randolph in 2016. So it's pretty easy to construct a narrative where you're just like, yeah, this team is not going to make it. But then again, I can also look at this team and say, if they got a little bit of help, some guys came out fresh, I think they could be a pretty solid unit.
Yeah.
If I had to boil it down to just one guy, it's Marc Gasol for me. Because it's just how does he come back from that injury, and are they still going to be grit and grind in 2016 with Randolph and Gasol if he's even a step slower?
Well, I mean, here's the thing on Marc Gasol, I would say, though. Like, his athletic gifts we're never predicated on explosion or quick movement.
Sure.
So if he slows a little bit, it's not like he slowed from, you know, he was relying on it.
Yeah.
In any way,
well, yeah, but on the other hand, like, if it's also been a hindrance to him. So if you slow him down to a certain point, like, at what point does he just look like he's walking in quicksand against what's now a league of, like, 6'9 to 6'11 rangy athletic guys? You know what I mean? Right. If he's not even quick enough to use his size to an advantage, then he becomes kind of a liability, which I don't have any reason to think that his injury is that bad or he's coming back in that way, but it's at least possible that time just kind of passes him by, right?
So let's do this two ways, because I have a hard time, like, this is what makes them interesting to me. Let's say that they have reasonably good health. And what I mean by that is Marc Gasol comes back, you know, maybe the first 10 games he's working his way back into it still, but Marc Gasol essentially plays a good 70 games, 65 at a pretty high level. Chandler Parsons manages to hit 70 games for the first time in his career, which I don't know if that's actually 100% true, but it feels like it. It feels like he's always hurt. So to say he hits 70 games for the first time in his career, Tony Allen continues to be Iron Man Tony Allen. Mike Conley, the foot injury that he had at the end of last season, doesn't really bother him. And Zach Randolph, who's old and kind of slowing down, continues basically at the same pace last year. If I told you that was true about this lineup, that these five guys all had those pretty good things happening to them, what win total would you expect for the season?
You go first. I've gone first on the last two. You're going first on the last two.
If I was told that, I would predict 50 wins for them.
I was going to say 48.
And 50 actually feels like a stretch, because every year, this is what I think is really funny, every year Memphis has been the team for the past three seasons where their win total far outstrips their actual point differential.
Yeah.
They have just found ways to win close games and grind it out every single season, so that they always had like the point differential of a team that would, you know, win like 43 games or 42 games, but they'd always end up with 50 or 52 or something like that. So I kind of want to say 45 wins, but I have a feeling that if they're pretty healthy and they get contributions, like James Ennis will be a nice spark plug. He's athletic and runs a lot, and Brandon Wright can be okay. Wade Baldwin will hopefully come in and give them a nice boost. Like, they could be okay.
I mean, there's some fun. So, there's some good stuff on this team. So in that scenario where their main guys are pretty much healthy, it's not hard to talk yourself into high 40s, because again, like you just said, I hate the grit and grind stuff, but that is kind of what they do. That there's just like those games in the last 2 minutes that are 2 or 3 points. They almost seems like they just like pound the ball, get 2 baskets and go out with a win. Yeah. And so I just feel like if they're going to be kind of healthy, I'm just convinced they're going to be somewhere between like the 6th and 4th seed and just like firmly in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And nothing flashy, but they're just going to be there, and it's, you can like ride them in.
Now, I know for a fact that you don't like Chandler Parsons.
And I do want to give Chandler credit, though. He has played more than 70 games twice in his career, his second and
first
third seasons.
Years. Okay. Yeah, so Chandler Parsons managed to play more than that a couple times. Hasn't recently. But anyways, I know you're not a big fan of Chandler Parsons, but I will say this. He's better than Jeff Green, who he essentially replaces on this team. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
I mean, sure. Yeah, I don't...
Damning him with faint praise.
Yeah, well, but it's like...
So let me ask you this question, because this is where I find I don't like it at all. I'm gonna make you do more of it. So Chandler Parsons or Harrison Barnes, who's a better basketball player?
Can I put in their health as part of?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you still have to think about it.
Yeah, I guess. Oh. It's a toss-up for me. I don't want either one of them, really.
So, Parsons, let me just make it really fun. Parsons or Rudy Gay?
Ooh. Rudy Gay, so I could have this podcast with you later.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, because the Jeff Green to Chandler Parsons one's actually the most annoying, because Jeff Green, as well documented, can do a lot of things. He's just average to below average at all of them. So it never feels like you're losing anything, because in your head you're like, oh, you know, Jeff can rebound, so that's fine. We'll just put him in there. But then you remember as soon as he starts to play, he's not actually that great of a rebounder. He's just pretty good. Whereas Chandler, you're like, oh, he can shoot. And he's tall. And there's not a lot else that you've really got going. I mean, like,
he's got a little bit of an off-the-dribble game.
That, oh, man, those 2.4 assists, or 2.8 last season, sorry. And, I mean, like, that's fine, but it's not like he's this lengthy point forward either.
No, that's true.
It's just, I mean, I feel like he's a guy in everyone else's mind that if you put him on an average team and replace their small forward with Chandler Parsons, they would say, oh, their wins go from 41 to, like, 46. And for me, I'm like, eh, go from, like, 41 to 43. I'm not saying he's an average player. I just don't see him as being this huge difference maker. So when it comes to Memphis, yeah, it's great that he's giving them a lot of shooting, but he's not really all that quick. And what's he going to do on defense besides, like, you have to hope he's pushing people into Marc Gasol, and I don't really know if I can trust him to do that.
Right.
It's not like he was doing that in spades last season in Dallas. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not, I guess, who was there to really push them into, but still.
Right. Like, could it push him to dirt?
Yeah.
That's going to help.
Yeah, and it's not like he was asked to do that during his Houston years because they had other guys, so I don't know. People are trying to sell me of, oh, well, you got Chandler Parsons, so there you go. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really know that that's enough for me to be all in on this team. It, like, if they end up having their best possible season, I don't think it's going to be because Chandler Parsons lit the world on fire. I'm totally fine with being wrong about that.
Okay. So now that I've told you, I think that if they had everything go right, they could probably, or pretty well, they could probably win. They could push 50 wins. You want to hear my actual prediction for this team?
Sure.
37 wins.
Because you just don't think it's going to go well?
There's no way.
Just probability weighted. There's no way, right?
Like, there's and this team, so this is their second string team. Depending on how you feel about Wade Baldwin at point guard, it's either Andrew Harrison or Wade Baldwin. At shooting guard, Vince Carter or Troy Daniels. Small forward, it's James Ennis. Power forward, it's Jamichael Green and Jarrell Martin. And at center, maybe Brandon Wright, but at center, I'm putting Brandon Wright there. And rookie Deontay Davis. Like, this team is thin.
But that's a funny thing. This is why health is such an important thing in the NBA. If you just take their starting five and then look at the two or three guys behind them, you can be okay with it. Like Brandon Wright, Vince Carter, and then let's just say James Ennis, right? Like that's a bad next three, but the starting five is pretty strong. So you're okay giving them an above average to 45, 48 wins, right, automatically. The problem is that starting five, there's going to be at least one of those guys who plays only 60 games.
They're tissue paper. There's going to be more than one of those guys who plays 60
games. I mean, I think that's your bare minimum, right? Is that...
Yeah.
Oh, man. And so, like, if it's Zach Randolph, I mean, this is kind of unfair to ask, but what would you do if just... How would you change the lineup if Zach Randolph is down for 20 games? Like, what's your starting...
I would actually try... I mean, I don't know anything about Jamichael Green and Jarrell Martin because they have been injured every single season they've been in the NBA.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't say, I mean, they're probably not going to be very good.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd probably have to start Brandon Wright next to Marc Gasol. You'd probably have
to. Because unlike what we just described with the Spurs, you can't move Chandler Parsons down at the four because, I mean, they've never done that. That's never been their thing is to have four out and just play around Marc Gasol. And I know he can do it. I'm not making the argument he can't, but you're asking a team that if they've got one thing going for them, it's the buzzword that Colmies loves of continuity. So just being like, well, now we're doing this, probably isn't going to work. And even then, that means you have to start Vince Carter or James Ennis, which I don't know is really preferable to Brandon Wright if you're talking about, you know, a true starter playing 30 to 36 minutes.
Right. Yeah, and here's the basically, this is what I think is really interesting. There were a lot of people who wanted the Pelicans this offseason to just go big after one guy. I even talked once about going big after Batum. Like, just go after, put all your chips in, go after one guy to fill the hole at small forward and basically use up every piece of cap space you have because that's what you have to do when you go big after one dude. So basically they did this team that did that.
Yeah.
They basically said, screw depth. We're going in big on our top five and we're going to try to paper over the rest of the spots and hope we're okay. And The Pelicans went a different route where they just went out and got a whole bunch of average, pretty solid guys to fill in all the different holes, at least to an average level. And if we get injuries, be able to cover for them. So we'll see which is the better one. But I'm only giving them 37 wins. I really think that this and this is the team that falls off. And if worst case scenario, this team is in the 20s.
Yeah, I mean it feels like a just really it's just a fragile puzzle, right? Where when it's perfectly constructed, this team makes sense to me. Like, I get why all these guys are in their position. But if you take one of them out, it's just totally screwed up. And you can't really repair it. Even if Tony Allen goes down, Tony Allen was, you know, not really the same player he was last year, though he is still an Iron Man. Like, how do you start 39-year-old Vince Carter?
Right.
So do you start Troy Daniels? Well, that's not going to work out great, I'd imagine. So
right.
It's just... It's so easy to get optimistic about this team, but it's so much easier still to get pessimistic once you consider injuries.
I wonder if you were a fly on a wall in their front office, how much they're actually hoping that one of the Jays, Jamichael, Jarrell, or Jordan, managed to come back and give them some depth. Like, I have a bet that they're really hoping that at least one of them works out.
Yeah, or James Ennis even. I mean, they need
right.
Like, putting together their back three is really tough without one of those guys being at least a competent NBA player.
Yep. And one thing we didn't even mention, their coach is gone. They have a brand new head coach. Yeah. Never been a head coach anywhere. Never been a head coach on the NBA level.
Which you could argue that adds a little bit of stability, because I know the Jaeger situation was pretty volatile, but it's also a really unknown variable that allows you to think about a huge win spread.
Yep. So I made my final pick at 37. What is your final pick for this team?
I'll go 38.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move. So this is interesting because, you know, we just spent a lot of time talking about the schedule, about how we have a tough strength of schedule that people are publishing. I mean, at least I've picked the Mavericks and the Grizzlies to be under 500 at this point.
Yeah.
So maybe the strength of schedule won't be so terrible. Especially when we find out, we think about what happens with this next team, the Houston Rockets. Now, this is I feel like in the Pelicans world, this is now the most mocked team around. I've enjoyed mocking some of what they did.
I am ready to mock this team.
Okay. But part of this, of course, because we took two major pieces of our rotation in Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. Everybody hates Eric Gordon. I don't think anyone listens to this podcast who has a warm feeling for Eric Gordon. Maybe they do, and I'm just projecting, which I do a lot. But I have a warm feeling for Ryan Anderson, but I also recognize that defensively he's abysmal. So basically what they did was they went out, they signed Eric Gordon. They let Ty Lawson – well, no, they traded Ty Lawson before, so they didn't bring back any backup point guard, which – I think it's pretty fascinating. So I think it was Aaron Brooks they had for a short time.
Yeah.
They brought in Ryan Anderson and let Terrence Jones walk. And they let Dwight Howard walk and replaced him with Nene from Washington. And I guess, I forgot they re-signed Michael Beasley. Beasley, major difference maker.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to talk about this.
Essentially, they changed out a starting lineup that had Patrick Beverley, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, whichever member of the team that was in favor at the time between Terrence Jones and Montez Yunus and Montrezl Harrell and even Clint Capella sometimes. And then now they replaced him with Ryan Anderson as a starting power forward and Clint Capella at center. Is that a starting lineup that strikes fear in your heart?
No.
Not even a little bit?
No. I mean, well, it strikes fear just because of James Harden, which he has this really obnoxious skill set that, he can be effective when he has nothing around him just because he's got this free throw line advantage, right? And so he's just going to – and in some ways he might actually be helped by being surrounded, with other guys.
And he's actually a pretty good shooter.
Yeah.
You got to give him
No, sure. But I just mean, So the one strategic move that I actually liked that they did was not getting another point guard, because with James Harden, they end up being a point guard name only. So, yeah, it's fine, because, I mean, James is going to come and play and be ball dominant, and you can put Eric Gordon next to him. And so now you've got two or three shooters, depending on how you play that next whoever comes in next around him. So he can get to the basket during those lineups and get fouls and pass out, hypothetically, though maybe not in practice. Right. So like that's – which, again, I feel like a lot of this team's construction is like, well, if James is a different type of guy, this will really work.
He's not bad at finding open guys.
No, he's not. He's not. Offensively,
James is very hard for me to get down on.
Yeah, fine. But I think my point is more that what strikes fear in me is that I think James can be effective – just as effective with bad guys around him, because he still has that one essential part of his game he can rely on. Which,
right.
And in a way, if a guy's kind of cheating, if the guy protecting the pass gets on Clint Capella, he's almost more likely to come over and give a dumb foul on James because he's not worried about his guy as much. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can see James actually having a really strong year because of that. So he ends up getting like 12 free throw attempts per game or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you just think about this team, this starting lineup, and you could take Beverly out and place him with Eric Gordon if you want to, but or even just leave Beverly in. Beverly's not a bad three-point shooter. He's not good, but he's enough that you can't just completely ignore him, right?
Right, which is all you need from him if you're Houston, really.
Right. Like, with Ryan Anderson on the floor, if you run a pick-and-roll with Clint Capella, who can finish with authority around the rim, he's an athletic rim runner in a Tyson Chandler kind of mold, this team's offense could be extraordinarily potent. Like, if I told you that they were the best offense, and I mean, that includes with Golden State out there, if they were the best offense in the league next year, would it shock you?
Yeah, if I told you they were a bottom three defense, would that shock you?
No.
So
no, we're not talking defense yet.
Okay.
We're just talking offense. Like, it would check me a little bit because I don't feel like their backups, other than Eric Gordon, really bring any offensive talent to the table that's helpful. And you have to have at least one guy who can do something off the bench normally.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But, or more than just Eric Gordon. I wouldn't be shocked at all, like, if it was almost impossible for you to stop these guys from scoring. And if you can, if, like, one of the components that made them so effective a couple of years ago was their transition scoring. Well, when I did the huge breakdown of what Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon's offense was, and what was being replaced with new guys, the thing that popped out, like just dead front and center, kicked me in the teeth. Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson in transition are brutal. Like, they murder people. They were in the top of the 80th percentile. In transition points per possession, because they just run to the 3-point line and murder you. And I, of course, had this like thing in my memory of Eric Gordon dribbling 1-on-2 and losing the ball out of bounds almost every single time. But if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, and on this team he won't in transition, he's deadly running to the 3-point line. He and Ryan Anderson will kill people. So in transition, they're going to be death. They're going to play a really spread offense. This is a team that will be fun to watch offensively, especially with Mike D'Antoni there. But we do have to talk about the other side. So,
well, and also, wait, hold on. I know Dwight gets clowned on a lot for his offense,
right,
but
mm-hmm.
he still, even after all the injuries he's had, is a potent pick-and-roll player and really could open up things for both James and Patrick. And who was Aaron Brooks? Was their other backup point guard, right? So, I mean, Clint Capella is never going to draw that type of attention from him.
You don't think he can be that, like, he doesn't have to be, like, drawing all the attention, but he does have to be a threat, and I think he can definitely do that. Or do you not feel the love for Clint Capella that I do?
After 35 starts, I'm a little bit hesitant. I mean,
okay.
I don't know that. So, I mean, it's not just a small sample size argument. I just honestly don't know how much you can expect from him, given that he's only had really one NBA season.
Okay.
And again, I think it's really fun to mock Dwight Howard, but I'm not sure that you can count on Clint to really replace that in full.
Okay.
Which then I think that has, if you give him full due in my mind, I think that has sort of downstream effects on the rest of the offense. So I get what you're saying with the full court offense, but I think they can be stopped in the half court, even if it takes a really great defense. I just don't think they'll be an unstoppable entity on that end.
Okay.
Which, again, if they manage their full court well enough, they won't have to really deal with that problem, but I still think it could be there.
Okay, so let's talk defensively.
So,
Are they going to be better next year defensively than the Pelicans were this last season?
Ooh, what was the Pelicans' defensive rating? Just remind me really quickly.
I don't know what the rating itself was. They ended up 27th.
I think they were 27th.
Fourth worst team.
Their defensive rating was 109.5.
Was it 109? Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty bad.
That's really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
like basically, if anyone says 110 to me, and offense, I'm like woohoo, and defense, I have a hollow spot in my stomach.
Yeah. So I was about to say I thought I'd be around 107 for the Pelicans, and I was going to say worse because I had them penciled in. I was going to predict the Houston Rockets to be like 109 to 110. So I guess still worse, but only because I didn't realize how bad the Pelicans were. I just wanted to kind of frame it this way, like you've done before. The last time we talked in a podcast, what we were talking about the Pelicans was this idea of versatility, and they had three or four guys that you could put in very different ways and make different units out of with the signing of Solomon Hill and Tuan Moore and Pondexter, right? So all these rangy wings that can play a couple of positions that can switch. That's the idea we were buying into.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this roster, and if you go down their small forward list, you've got Trevor Ariza, Corey Brewer, Michael Beasley, and Sam the Man Decker. I just feel like this team is the exact opposite in some ways of what we were talking about the Pelicans being able to do. And don't get me wrong, there are a couple of guys still on this roster I wouldn't mind having in our wing rotation, like Trevor Ariza and even Corey Brewer, I guess, but...
I think you need to look at his numbers last year.
Yeah.
He crashed and burned really hard.
That's true. But maybe he's a volatile stock. Maybe he's going to trend upwards. The best time to buy low, man.
He's had some pretty crappy seasons before and followed with some pretty decent ones. So
he's got a 51-point scorer, Corey Brewer, to you, sir. That's the way I kind of think about this team. Is like it's like they went with a rangy wing idea in mind, but none of those guys are actually all that competent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see where you're going, but, like, you can easily see, I can see them being able to have Trevor Ariza on whichever forward's the most explosive and Beverly on whichever guard is the most explosive and Clint Capella being able to defend whatever center at least okay, or Nene. Nene, for that matter, he's still a solid defensive player even if he's old as crap and misses as many games as Eric Gordon does. I think we as Pelicans fans have seen when you try to, even if you have two major holes defensively in your lineup, it's unstoppable. It's unsupportable.
I was about to say, like, that doesn't even matter though, because if you have Ryan Anderson at the four and you're doing a 1-4 pick and roll, like, are you going to switch? What are you going to do? You can eventually just get around him or get a nasty matchup. So it only takes one sieve for it to really happen. And again, if you've got James Harden moving over and having Eric Gordon play in some lineups with those two guys on the floor together, yeah, it's great that they can both shoot and James is, another worldly talent, but there's not going to everyone. It's going to just be a free pass around them.
Yeah. So,
I don't think Clint Capella is going to be able to negotiate a defense the way that Dwight Howard has in the past. Even though I think Dwight probably had a down year last year, I think he may have been a little bit pouty. I still don't think that. Like, I could see Clint getting in over his head, trying to basically fill two gaps in a defense.
So I'm going to do the one thing where I think this team could actually not be the laughingstock everybody's setting it up to be, and why I feel that way. Mike D'Antoni does not pay any attention to defensively, so I don't think this will ever be a situation that will become reality, because he's their new coach, in case anyone didn't know that. But if I told you the crunch time lineup for the Houston Rockets was Patrick Beverley, James Harden, Corey Brewer, Trevor Ariza, And Nene Hilario, or maybe Clint if he's actually a reasonable starter this season. That team there is not awful defensively. That team there is probably 14th or 15th defensively.
Yeah,
I
would have said 15th, yeah.
So if you have James Harden, and James Harden is doing, and he's actually peak James Harden, not fat, out of shape, I've spent too much time with the Kardashians, James Harden, who started last year, the one who was there at the second half of the season last year, the one we saw the year before, that team's offense is still probably top 10, wouldn't you say?
I'd put it closer to 12. 12 to 15.
You think it's that low? I think it's actually higher than that. So I think that best case scenario, if Mike D'Antoni is capable of not being like lured into the fact that he could have a spread pick and roll offense that's crazy and just who cares what happens on the defensive end, he could put out in crunch time a lineup that does serious damage and can probably win a bunch of games. That's what I think.
Okay,
that's
but in that lineup you just described, who's providing the shooting there?
Well, Aries and Beverly are at least league average most of the time.
Okay, Trevor Reeves is like a 35-37% 3-point shooter.
That's essentially league average.
Yeah, so essentially league average, and he's taken around 6 a game the last few years, so he's fine. Mm-hmm. Corey Brewer, well below with league average,
doesn't
take that many.
Right.
Patrick Beverly takes like 4 a game and is about league average, 4.5 a game. I just don't think that there's enough shooting around James with what James is going to do for me to really be convinced that offense will be able to remain as potent as D'Antoni could possibly make it. Because also there's not really, I mean, sure, use Patrick Beverly as a creator, but then that just leaves James sitting on the wing. I was a little unfair to James earlier. He actually is a very good passer and reasonably willing, despite what Dwight Howard may say. So, mm-hmm. I think that's part of his game too, and I just don't know. Like, I'm just not that intrigued by the idea of him passing out to Trevor Reeves and Corey Brewer because they're gonna have at least one defender stay home. They can at least sacrifice that. So if you take away Patrick Beverly probably and his 37% shooting, like I'm just really not convinced that they would be a 7th to 8th best offense still just because of James Harden.
Right.
Because I mean, the Pelicans have also seen that top 10 to top 5 guys can't make it happen individually. So I think your best hope from there, your most potent offensive play would be let James get into the paint and see if he can get a foul or a pass out.
Mm-hmm. I think he's better at generating offense on it. Like essentially we watched our team do that with Tyreek Evans.
Right. But that's,
and it was good enough in a lot of situations.
I guess I would,
James Harden. Yeah. Like, makes Tyreek Evans look like a schmuck.
Right, but he's also not Steve Nash. Like, this isn't going to be, the way James Harden is going to negotiate D'Antoni's offense is not going to be the same way as his Phoenix teams, right?
Yeah.
I think the way that this makes sense to me is if James is kind of getting into the paint, going under the basket, passing back out, and doing that a couple of times until they get a great shot really quickly. But James is going to do that. As soon as he sees the basket, he's going to start flailing his arms and try to hit somebody and get up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not. I think that's kind of a significant difference. Okay. But I think it's also really interesting because I don't know what James Harden looks like in D'Antoni's system. And I think he's actually a really, it's probably the oddest pairing of one of the best offensive talents in the league with D'Antoni's system. Don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating, and I expect that his assist will take a spike. I don't expect him to be Steve Nash, of course.
Right.
I expect he will be he will have a slightly different impact offensively.
And some of this goes back to the mental stuff we've discussed earlier with this team, because you just made the, like, that he was kind of out of shape and not into it last season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what if he's just not into what D'Antoni's selling?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, like, and that's happened to D'Antoni before, right?
Harden, from all reports, Harden can be a difficult personality to get along with the times.
Yeah, so this is outside of Memphis. I actually think this team's very interesting. Those are my two interesting teams.
Okay. So let me ask you this real question, real quick, because it keeps like nagging at the back of my mind, so I want to make sure I say it.
Okay.
We know Eric Gordon doesn't play full basketball seasons.
Yeah.
So let's say he does his typical Eric Gordon thing and he misses 15 games early in the season and another 10 games later in the season with various ailments. And KJ McDaniels is forced to absorb those minutes. Are those games for the Rockets better or worse?
Ooh.
Is KJ McDaniels a better fit for this team than Eric Gordon?
I mean, I'm not a KJ McDaniels guy.
I know.
So, because I mean, are there KJ McDaniels guys?
His mom.
Yeah, his mom's really into his game.
She's on. She's got a big, good Twitter game going.
I mean, Eric's gonna play because of D'Antoni, right?
Oh yeah.
So, and there's no way he can't play. Oh,
well, other than the fact
he physically can't play.
That's right.
I just mean, I think if Eric Gordon got slotted on a lot of different teams, like 25 games in, the coach would be like, let's dial this back to like 18 minutes a game. boy.
Yeah, I mean, D'Antoni will love his shooting and he'll get lots of open
shots. Yeah, because see, that's the thing is, I think on a lot of teams, I would say better because I think the team's response would be, okay, let's get Corey Brewer out there and just try to wreck shop on defense and give him Eric Gordon's minutes and just make it up that way and just be worse on offense without a shooting. But I think D'Antoni's going to be like, KJ, let it fly. You've got a 28% career average. Just believe in yourself. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to work out for them. I think it'll be worse just because of what KJ would be asked to do. Yeah, I don't. So what kind of season are you expecting from both Anderson and Gordon?
I actually expect that Anderson will have probably one of his best seasons of his career this year.
He's a, and this is going to annoy people, but he's a sleeper pick for me to like not make an all-star team, but make that obnoxious guys who missed out or guys who should have been more seriously considered, because I think he could have that good of a season.
I fully expect that Anderson, he needed a fresh start. He needed a place that will use his talents, and he's going to get a lot of offensive shots. And this, I mean, we're talking about an starting lineup that's Patrick Beverley, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella. Anderson's going to get a lot of shots in that. And now he got a lot of shots for the Pelicans, but the number is not going down at all. I just will see. I expect that he will get a lot more usage and he'll have a pretty good season. I expect to see a normal Eric Gordon season. Like, Eric Gordon is an average shooting guard who shoots the ball okay. Like, I am 100% of the belief that if you take like a shooting guard like Randy Foy and you give him the same minutes that Eric Gordon is, you would see almost no difference between their stat lines. He's that guy.
I think it's a little bit different. I think he's a below average shooting guard. That's a pretty, like a very good shooter, which gives people this, he's kind of fool's gold in the same way that Jeff Green is. Like, he's Jeff Green-esque because people want to say, if we can just get him to be everything else average, we can use this superior shooting technique and we can make him a top 20 shooting guard. The problem is you're not going to give him to average in any other category, really.
No, he's going to be terrible.
Like, he's a horrible defender. Defensive. He's a horrible ball handler. He can't pass. Like, it's never worth it, really.
Right. And so he'll probably, I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to only score like 9 points a game. I expect he'll get enough minutes in a D'Antoni offense that he'll probably once again be somewhere between like 14 and 17 points per game. And he'll get a lot of threes and he'll hit a lot of threes and he'll provide you with 2 rebounds and 2 assists per game and be a net negative.
Yeah, the thing that could be annoying is there's a chance that he shoots like 42%.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, but I mean, you're gonna hear about it. People are gonna come at you in the tweets.
I don't care. they can come at me. Eric Gordon would have to be in like a 50% season. He'd have to be doing like the Kyle Korver for me to even be like blinking at not having him around. And even then,
that's unfair to Kyle Korver.
Right.
Who became like average to slightly above average team defender, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if Eric Gordon changed most of his core qualities, people could come at you.
All right. So now that we've been going around in circles about this, because my take on this team is their best outcome is actually not in the realm of what Mike D'Antoni will do. So I could see, like, if you brought in somebody who's a lot more defensive-minded and thought about it, like, a certain way, it wouldn't shock me if this team ended up winning, like, 46, 47 games, maybe even push it to 50. But I don't think Mike D'Antoni is going to help them do that. So do you want to do your prediction or my prediction first?
I think you're going first because I did the first two first.
All right, I'm going 43 wins for the Houston Rockets.
Oh, it's disappointing. I thought you were going to go way lower. I'm going 45.
Okay. No, I can't go way lower because James Harden is on this team.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I just said to you, like, you could put non-entities, like completely trash offensive players who are merely average to a little bit above average on defense next to James Harden, and I think that they will be a team that has a good enough offense that it doesn't matter if they have an average defense.
Yeah, and I think my outcomes are almost binary, where if James Harden just fits in D'Antoni's system, and D'Antoni's willing to at least give up some of his offensive ideals to have a little bit of defense, I think they could win 50 games. And if James Harden, like, just goes out and starts laying up turds, I think they're a 41 team, even with James Harden. It sounds so I think it's just...
That's interesting. You think their floor is 40?
I mean...
Like a reasonable floor.
Yeah.
Not like half the team gets injured. Like a reasonable floor.
Yeah, so if Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson are both, for their standards, reasonably healthy, but James Harden is still completely out on the team, I think they still get the average because I think a pouting James Harden is still really good. I mean, they got in the playoffs that way last year.
Yep.
And noise can creep in. I don't know. Do you have a lower floor for them?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Like the only way that the floor could be lower is if James Harden is literally not playing.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
If James Harden doesn't play at all for this team, it is a last year Pelicans disaster for them.
Right. I mean, I think James Harden could actually be screaming at D'Antoni on the bench and they'd still win 40 games.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So that is our Southwest Division. We're not very high on the Southwest Division, actually. Like every single team except for San Antonio. That was one of the interesting things is they were talking about the different divisions and how some are so strong and some are so weak and Southwest is so strong. And I was taking a look at the divisions and I actually have two divisions I feel are probably stronger than the Southwest division.
I think here's the situation with the Southwest division. It's been the strongest for so long. It has this legacy credibility. But if you were to look back 5 years from now and say, where was the moment where we stop being the powerhouse, it could be this year, right? Because you've got, I mean, it's sort of just emotional that Tim Duncan retires and that's kind of a changing point for the Spurs, but this is Dallas's third or fourth time running at a major free agent and missing out and, you know, getting Harrison Barnes who...
Wait, Harrison Barnes is a major free agent, man. He got the max.
Yeah, I don't think...
Max.
Just because he makes similar amounts of money to Kevin Durant does not mean he's as talented. That's
He makes similar amount of money to Anthony Davis too.
Yeah, so sorry AD, but you're behind him and Carl Anthony Towns now.
Holy cow. Harrison Barnes is making as much money as Anthony Davis.
What a time to be alive, folks.
Holy cow.
But okay, so just to finish this thought, Memphis as like they, I mean, I don't really care about Chandler Parsons coming in. I think I made that clear. Mike Conley gets his big contract a little bit older. Zach Randolph, he knows how long he's going to be effective. And Marc Gasol, right? Injury. And then the Houston Rockets, Dwight leaves, and you bring in D'Antoni, and you kind of have this experiment going on with two Pelicans players as featured contributors. So as we've said all that, I do think this could be a shift in the division, but also last season the win totals were Spurs 67, Mavericks 42, Grizzlies 42, Rockets 41. Right. So that was 6, 7, and 8 in the NBA. But
so really the shift already happened.
Exactly, and if you'll allow a little bit of randomness in win outcomes, I mean there's a reality where the Utah Jazz get in instead of the Rockets that was really really likely. It could have just simply happened. So
yeah,
now you're
looking
at
in one game.
Yeah, in one division two divisions with three, that's going to happen. If every team was average or flat. So it's easy to still talk about how tough this team is, and we haven't done any Pelicans stuff, but I'm not going to give away my Pelicans ranking because I want to think about it, how much they're going to win. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair that we're both on the line that they could be as high as the second or third best team in the Southwest.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so let me ask you this question real quick because I thought about it on Twitter. I wanted to get your take before I ran away. In past years, I've usually had like four – we talked about this at the very beginning with the schedule where there's a couple teams that we look at and say there is a 95% chance or 100% chance. That's just a loss. That is a game we're losing. It doesn't really matter. If we win it, it's just stupid luck, okay? In past years, I usually have like five or six teams that I feel that way about. And sometimes even seven. This year, I have three that I have like hard coded as that way, and one that I just feel that way for personal reasons. How many teams do you have that are in the when you look at that team, that's a loss on the schedule?
Oh boy!
And I'll give you the easy ones: Golden State, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
I've got Golden State and the Spurs, obviously.
And the Spurs. Cleveland?
See, I kind of feel like so to me, those first two teams are 100% losses. Like, just pencil them in as losses.
Even though the Pelicans have matched up pretty well with the Spurs the past few years.
Yeah, even still. I mean, it's just okay. they're that good, and it's anything can surprise me, but I just would never expect to win.
Okay.
Cleveland, I just don't feel like they're – I don't know.
You got no respect for the defending champions.
Well, as a regular season team, not really. I mean, because I feel like there's those – they don't have to win more than 50 games in these. So Cleveland to me is like a 90 to – a really paltry 85 to 90% win for them. But sometimes stuff happens.
Okay.
Like they lost to bad teams a lot last year because it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think those would be my three. Because normally I throw Oklahoma City in there. That's not a thing anymore.
Nope.
The Clippers I guess would be the next team unless I'm missing someone in the East. But –
Toronto scare you?
Not as an automatic loss, no.
Okay.
I mean, they won 56 games last year, but I just don't.
Yeah.
Not as long as we have Anthony Davis. If he's hurt, then maybe so. Yeah, and the Clippers, I just, no. So, yeah, I guess I might only have two. That's really strange, yeah.
I've got four, and it's Cleveland, Golden State, the Spurs, and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I guess I should probably throw Cleveland in there because Boston, that's annoying. But for Cleveland, I would definitely going the morning before any Cleveland game, I'd expect us to lose.
Yeah. Like Boston Celtics, this is like the thing that gets me. I look at their roster and I laugh at their players. I look at their roster and I look at each player and say that guy's got that flaw and that flaw and that flaw and that flaw and that guy's got this flaw and like other than like. Maybe Jay Crowder, but most of those guys, I just look at them. I'm like, this is not an imposing set of players.
And Al Horford, you forgot.
And now Al Horford's there, but even he's not like he doesn't strike fear in your heart. He's like, that's a really good player who's going to do a lot of really good things, pretty good. But you're not like, wow, he's going to take over the game and destroy my team.
Yeah, if I told you the last 3 minutes of a game came down to Al Horford versus Anthony Davis, you'd be like, great, that's an awesome win for us.
I'll take that in a second,
yeah.
But the Celtics make the Pelicans look like morons for large portions of the game. Like, bad passes that turn into turnovers, that turn over into really bad defensive rotations that make you give up. Like, it just... The Celtics just do that to the Pelicans. And maybe I'm desperate. Like, this is like one of my big things I hope that I get to see this year is I want to see a game on November 14th when the Pelicans are playing Boston in New Orleans where they keep the number of I'm a complete moron plays down to under five. If they could do that, I will be 100% on board on everything that happened in this offseason.
So that's
even if they lose every other game,
that's the indicator where you're like, this was a success.
As long as they don't look like idiots, I'm happy.
So what's in the? I mean, I don't know. We shouldn't talk about it because it's in the East, and that's not the division we're doing tonight. But
I mean, it still burns me up that Los Angeles Lakers game where they lined up looking like they're going to the basket to the left, and the Pelicans just lined up next to them defending the basket on the left. When the Lakers were shooting at the basket on the right. And the Lakers just received the ball. Like, Kobe ran towards the right basket, received the ball, and had a layup. And the Pelicans stood there like, oh. Were we supposed to defend that basket? So
I mean,
burns me up. Burns me. How the frick can a professional basketball team make that mistake? Anyways, not gonna talk about that anymore. So that is our Southwest Division playoff. Our preview. We'll be back in a week to pick an Eastern Conference. So if you guys have an Eastern Conference, or division, not a conference, that you would prefer us to take a look at, go ahead and send me a tweet or two at SchwanBSS. Got anything else you want to talk about, Nick?
No, I guess for the sign-off for this, let's just, how many teams from the Southwest make the playoffs, and who are they?
My pick is I'm including the Pelicans, the Spurs, and Houston. I think those three teams will make it.
I'm not answering.
Thanks for listening to In the Know.